Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of React Roundup. I'm here with Paige Niedringhaus.
Hey, everybody.
And TJ Van Toll.
Hey, everyone.
I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv. I've just been working on the Dev Heroes Accelerator. You can find that at devchat.tv/heroes. And yeah, let's go ahead and get this kicked off. Now, this is a topic that I recommended mostly because I keep talking to people about it. And a lot of people are talking about basically how to get recognition at work, how to get recognition within the community, how to deliver at a high level at work, and again, within the community. And I was talking to people, and where they kind of started landing was this idea of being within the top 5% of developers, right? And they usually have a list of names of people that they're like, oh yeah, you know, like this person and this person and that person. And so I'm curious, you know, as we get started, what in your mind, like think about the people that are in that top 5%, what kinds of things are those people doing? Like what makes them that top 5% of developers? Hey, are you looking to join a team that gets to work on really cool projects, great technology stacks like React, Gatsby, Contentful, AWS, and tons more, similar things for Vue and Angular? If you're looking to grow in your career, work with an inclusive team that cares about the culture, and be part of something that you can be passionate about, then you should apply to work at this.labs. They focus on giving back to the community and having their developers do things like write blog posts and be on podcasts to help them enrich their careers as well. They're currently looking for engineering managers, senior architects, and senior software developers in React, Vue, and Angular. So if you're interested, send an email to jobs@this.co.
Yeah, so I could maybe kick things off here. I think like, because I've totally have the same sort of thing. You have certain names that come to mind. And I think that might be the first thing is the reason you know these names is because they're putting their work out in a public place. Either they're writing about it, blogging about it, maybe making videos, maybe speaking at conferences as well. Because really lots of times the top 5%, right? That doesn't necessarily mean these people are the smartest or the best or they're like superhero programmers. Lots of times they're just the people that are talking about it and the ones that are putting their names out there, getting their opinions out there. So one thing I know I always encourage people to do, and this is kind of hard because a lot of developers work on apps that are totally behind a firewall, totally internal apps, but try to find some venue for yourself to put your work in some sort of public venue. It may be starting your own blog to write about it, making your own videos, whatever you're most passionate about, whatever it is you're doing, try to put that work out there somewhere so that others can see it. Because that'll help both from just your own personal name recognition. It also helps with career as well. So when you go to, you look for your next job, you just have a list of things that people can actually reference and you don't have to say, I worked on this app that you can't see anywhere. So there's a lot of advantage from just having stuff out there in one way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. And it's funny that you immediately start talking about kind of the softer side of programming, the soft skills part of it, because writing is not an easy thing. And it's probably not a thing that comes very naturally to a lot of developers because so much of their time is spent, you know, in classes learning about computer science theory, learning about data structures, algorithms, all that good stuff. But the thing that I've seen personally and with people that I know and that I follow and that I look up to is exactly what you're saying. It's that they work on the other side of it, which is, yeah, they write good code, but then they talk about how they wrote that code and they explain their thought process and they explain the obstacles that they had to overcome. And one of the things that really, like, to me stands out as a really good developer is not only somebody who can explain how they built something or why they chose the way they did it, but also help other people understand and get better based on the experience that they've had. So maybe not like a one-to-one mentorship kind of role, but just being out there to offer advice, being willing to listen, being a sounding board to hear an idea and then kind of give feedback on it or how they would approach it. So yeah, it's all that kind of intangible, non-coding stuff that makes really good developers, in my opinion.
Yeah, because it's things like that that are things that get you ahead in your career sort of thing. So if you're looking for more advanced for higher roles, like lots of times those roles aren't just like, well, who knows the React API documentation the best? That's usually, I mean, that helps, right? If you have deep knowledge of that, it's not a bad thing. But lots of times it's your personal skills, how well you are at convincing people that your approach is best, or getting people on your side for a certain argument, or like helping to architect and teach other people on your team of a certain approach. So those things can have value outside of just like throwing a blog together. Those are the sort of skills that really do, I think, just help you get ahead in the long run.
Yeah, I have three thoughts on this. One is that anymore, if you're writing any kind of software that's complex at all, you're probably doing it on a team. So you have to be able to communicate. And that's becoming more and more of a critical skill. And I think you've both brought that in. The other thing that comes to mind, TJ keeps talking about how this helps in your career. I actually have a story about this. And I've told this before, so if you've heard it, I'm sorry, because I tell it a lot. But my wife and I had been married 3 years, literally to the day. It was our wedding anniversary. And I went into work and my boss called me in and they'd been trying to shop me around. I was working for it was my first dev job, but I was working for a consultancy. And the contract I'd been working on had ended. They'd been trying to find me something else. Ruby on Rails was not their core technology, but that was what they'd been hiring me out for. And so they laid me off, right? They just called me in and said, we can't find your work. And they laid me off. That wasn't what they promised me when they hired me, but that's another story. So I go home and I get home and it's, you know, a little before lunch. You know, I've got two little kids at home. And my wife is like, what are you doing here? Right. And I'm like, well, I got laid off, right? Here's all my stuff. And so I start applying for jobs and I got a call and, you know, they're like, hey, can you come in a couple hours and do an interview? And I'm like, well, sure. I'm not doing anything else today. You know, we were going to go to dinner that night for our anniversary. And so I go down there and I talk to this guy and his name was Jared and we're sitting there just chatting. And at the time I was doing Teach Me to Code screencasts where I was basically demonstrating Ruby on Rails stuff. And I was also doing the Rails Coach podcast where I was interviewing people about Ruby on Rails stuff. And so we start chatting and he asked me a question. And then not only would I answer his question, but I would also tell him where to get the video where I had recorded how to do it. And so we get out of the interview. And I'm heading back home to pick up my wife so we can go to dinner. And I was probably 10 minutes from their office and my cell phone rings and I answer it, you know, back before I knew it was bad to answer your cell phone in the car. And, you know, he's like, hey, so I went and checked out some of your videos. When can you start? And of course, I had been laid off that morning. So my answer was, well, I'll be there tomorrow. Right. And so I was literally unemployed for about 6 hours. And it was down to that content. And lest you think, oh, but Chuck, you're an expert. Like I said, that was my first programming job. I had been a professional programmer for about a year when that went down. And they made me a team lead a couple of weeks after they hired me. So you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to, you know, you can cover the basics. You can cover the stuff you're learning. And that's my third point, is that usually these people, they kind of take for granted the stuff that they do every day. And so the stuff they're covering is the stuff that they're learning. And so it also demonstrates that these folks are consistently out there learning new things. And that's what they're communicating about.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I work on one of those internal applications like you just described, where all the code is owned by my company. I can't share any of it. Nobody could even get to the website if they wanted to see it in action. But I'm able to take stuff that I'm learning at work, like how to use the use context API with React, or how to, like, real life examples of how use ref can be used beyond the React documentation of how to use it. And I'm able to turn that into blog posts because I know how to distill down these really large components and large scale examples that I'm working on day to day into smaller chunks and smaller blog posts that would make sense for an average developer. So even if you are on these projects where you can't share the code base, it's not open source, it's not stuff like that, there's still ways to take things that you learn and that finally make sense to you, and then share that through blogging, through videos, through smaller apps that you might make that use the same kind of patterns that you just used in your company's internal application. There's a million ways to do it. And it's funny because I've written blog posts now for about 3 years, some personally, some for other companies. And I still get emails from time to time from people who've read something that I wrote two and a half years ago that they just came across, thought was really interesting, and actually wanted to talk to me more about. So it's, you know, one of my blog posts I'm thinking of is I wrote about how our team moved from AngularJS 1 to React. I still have people reach out to me to this day saying, hey, I saw this. It was really interesting. I'd like to talk to you because my team is doing something similar, or it was just really interesting how you approached this and I want to, you know, try and understand it more. So that kind of stuff, even though it seems like it's forever ago and it doesn't seem like it will continue to be relevant, it actually really will. There's still stuff about jQuery that's relevant. So there's definitely going to be people who are going to come onto legacy applications or even new teams and need to understand this kind of stuff. And that's what that content is great for.
Yeah. And I think, like, I like this topic a lot because usually when I've talked about this before and encouraged people to be more public, to publish things, that's almost always the first question. It's like, well, what am I going to write about, right? I'm not doing anything interesting.
And you're not doing anything you think is interesting.
Right.
Because, like, you do it every day.
And I'd say, like, I've got two answers to that. First is you probably have some niche of what you're doing that's unique, like something unique to the apps you're building or the industries you're working on that is sort of a unique angle that might not be out there. And the other thing is, like, at least for me, and everybody's brain and head works differently, but for me, if I sit down and just say, like, I need to write something, then I probably won't just write anything. I need, like, a spark of inspiration. Like, If I hit a certain problem at work and then I find the solution and I'm like, oh, hey, that's kind of interesting. Like, I try to make a mental note of, like, oh, hey, that's not only interesting to me, like, this could be an interesting thing to just write up real quick while it's top of mind, and let me leverage this, like, this moment of, like, clarity and inspiration and put that out there at that moment when I'm in the right mood. If I go look like it, like, and do like almost like a sterile, like, well, here's the topics that are popular in the React world, let me find one of them and try to find, like, a unique way of writing this, I'm probably not going to write something that's very useful or interesting, right? I need that spark of inspiration. So if your head works like me, then maybe just keep an eye out for those moments during your workday where you notice something sort of interesting and just make a note of it and maybe just write up something quickly about it later in the day.
So we're flirting with this and I really want to talk about it, but, and let me back up just a little bit. So when I was a newer developer, I was constantly learning stuff and I just had the benefit of running into the right people, Greg Pollack, Eric Berry, that pushed me to publish, right? I started listening to podcasts, reached out to Greg. He founded Code School, you know, has been involved in the programming community forever. Right now he's pretty involved in the Vue community. But, you know, he encouraged me to start a podcast when I emailed him and asked him how. So I had that benefit. But the thing is that I was always learning something and I was always excited about it. And just because you're more advanced doesn't mean you have to stop learning, right? And this is another thing that I just hit. There are about four things that I see people doing on a consistent basis that put them in the top five. And this is one of them. Publishing is one of them, right? Putting content out there, participating in the community in that way is definitely one of the top ones. But the other one is that you're consistently learning. And so what you're talking about, TJ, isn't, hey, I'm going to go write so I can get famous. What you're talking about is, hey, I learned this new thing. It fired me up. I'm going to go write about it. And so what I tell people to do, and this sounds pretty extreme to a lot of people, but honestly, I go talk to more and more people who are out there doing this, and the more convinced I am that this is the way to go, spend an hour a day learning new stuff. If you can't do that, at least a half an hour, okay? At minimum, a half hour. And that's it. After your kids go to bed, before they get up in the morning, before your spouse is up in the morning. I mean, whatever your blocker is to time, go put in that half hour plus. And the reason is because if you're doing that and you're consistently learning the right things, you will get fired up. You will be inspired to write this stuff. But the other thing is, and this is the thing that I'm finding now with like my full-time job working on Ruby on Rails stuff, is that the time that I've put in on this stuff, it gives me all these ideas when stuff comes up at work. And I sound like this genius. And the reality is I read a blog post about it 2 days ago, right? And I'm able to bring a better solution to my team, which is really what it's about. And so I can contribute at a higher level. And then also it turns into content. And that's kind of my shtick these days, you know, with the podcasts. But yeah, you know, you need to be out there consistently learning and consistently growing. And I have a whole framework for this that we don't have time to go into. Maybe I'll come back on and we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I mean, what's your take? What do you guys do to stay current and to keep learning new things in this arena?
Well, what I do in addition to what I'm learning at work is I've figured out that front-end development is really what I enjoy the most. So I am, like you, listening to podcasts. I'm a big fan of the Syntax podcast.
Those guys are so funny.
They are. And I really, I buy Wes Boss's courses. I subscribe to Scott Tolinsky's Level Up tutorials because they cover a lot of things that I'm just generally interested in, like new improvements to React and different frameworks like Next. And, you know, Scott really is just all over the place with animations and Dino and just new courses every month. So I love, you know, getting to try stuff out like that through them. And then that inspires me either for stuff at work or for my own personal projects that I'm building, like my website. So yeah, I enjoy those. I subscribe to some weekly newsletters like React Status and JavaScript Weekly, which are just great roundups of all kinds of interesting things that people are doing across those different spaces. And like you said, I read a lot of other content, either as I'm trying to solve my own problems or as I'm just interested in it and want to learn more about it. And that really absolutely has helped me become a better developer, has helped me build my own projects, and has helped our team build better applications for our users.
Yeah. And I'll add to that. I think my favorite part of what you said is like, you know, things that inspire you or that you're passionate about. Because again, I think like if you set out to say like, I'm going to spend this hour a day and you make, again, like I'm going back to this, but like a clinical, like surgical list of like, well, here's the top 10 most popular JavaScript frameworks. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go sequentially through each and build like a to-do list app. I think you're going to hate yourself for doing that because, and maybe not even learn so much because it's something that like you feel like you should learn versus something you want to learn. Mm-hmm. So I do put in this extra learning time, but it's usually just like things that I find interesting or that I want to learn. So, and it might be just some completely random stuff, right? Like I might get an idea to like build a little game. I have a stupid mm-hmm. little Pokemon Go app that I maintain. I do a bunch of stuff related to that, but it's funny how things like that can actually do play back into your, the things you do on a work basis. So things that you're like genuinely interested in, whether it's reading, it can be just reading blogs, reading newsletters. So I subscribe to a few newsletters. I don't read everything in them, but I always skim them to look for interesting things. I read a lot of like general tech news as well, like beyond just frameworks. And just because I do a lot of writing, I like to just read people that write good. Same thing with like videos. Like I watch a lot of YouTube, and it's funny because my wife yells at me. She's like, "Do you even work?" She just sees me like watching YouTube videos. But the thing is like, it's funny, you can get inspired by people that do things really, really well and try to incorporate some of that into your own work. I've done the same thing with like Twitch streaming as well, which I've been doing a bit more of recently. Well, how do you get better at that? Well, you watch people that are good at it. And you, mm-hmm. you know, either steal or get inspired by some of the things they do, right? Like I've been watching some streamers that have really, really nice like transitions, right? Like smooth animations, like, oh, like that makes things look more professional. Maybe I could do something like that. Same sort of thing. Just whatever it is that you're passionate about. Cause you also don't want to get burnt out, because I think another concern is the technology world changes so fast, right? And if you if you tell yourself, I have to keep track of every latest framework and everything that comes out, you could also get burnt out pretty easily and lose your mind. So I would encourage people to look into things that you want to do or you have some need to do, and not to do it just for the sake of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One other thing that I would say is that my first manager, or my manager in my first tech job, gave me a great piece of advice, which was get used to being uncomfortable. He said, if you're uncomfortable with whatever you're doing, that means that you're growing and you're learning and you're outside of your box. So I haven't always taken that to heart, because I still enjoy being in my comfort zone from time to time. And there's definitely times where you just want to do your job and not really worry about anything else. But I found that by far the most growth and the most opportunities for me come when I say yes to things that I'm not comfortable doing. So the first thing that I can think of was, after I'd been blogging for myself, I was approached by a company to write a blog they were going to pay me for. And that was uncomfortable because I hadn't worked with an editorial team before. I hadn't, you know, had to cite my sources. Just, I hadn't had deadlines that were set by someone else. So that was an uncomfortable feeling. Another one was a girl that I worked with asked me if I would speak with her at a conference. And that was the first time I'd ever spoken at a conference. And I agreed to do it.
I think that got you invited on a podcast, if I remember right.
It did. It actually got me invited to speak on this particular podcast. And the blog that I'm thinking of that I wrote actually got me onto JavaScript Jabber to talk about Node 12, which was the new hotness at the time. Mm-hmm. And more recently, I've been, you know, talking to people about potentially writing a course for React Enterprise. And that made me incredibly uncomfortable to even think about how I would go about doing that. But it's such a good opportunity. And that kind of stuff comes along and helps you stand out, like you said, to your current employer, to future employers, to people in the community. And it's all just because you keep saying yes to things that you don't really know how to do yet, you don't feel good or confident about, and you figure it out as you go. And that I think is a huge thing, is that even though a developer may not really know how to solve a problem, they say yes and they figure it out along the way anyway.
Boy, that's the job, isn't it?
Well, and the funny thing is too, that sometimes being wrong is the best way to learn also. So I remember back, this is now several years ago, but I wrote an article on web components. This is probably like 6 or 7 years ago when they were a relatively new API. But I wanted to write an article that discussed like the issues I was having with web components. And I was sort of hesitant to write the thing, right? Because like, I'm not an expert in web components. And, you know, so, but I decided, you know, it takes a lot of guts, but I hit the publish button. And what's interesting is that like a lot of the more prominent people from the web component community came into the comments and reached out to me. And it was actually like, I ended up learning a lot from it, right? Because how else are you going to, you know, mm-hmm. how else are you going to get people from the web component spec to just come and shoot you a message, right, and talk about it? It's almost like you're getting free help and free support in a way from the people that work on it, because, you know, they have some interest. You're talking about their thing, right? So, but it's scary because no one likes to necessarily be put in the spotlight. But at the end of the day, I'm happy I did it because I ended up learning quite a bit from the experience of going through that.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I've seen in my own career. What was really telling to me was when I'd been doing Ruby Rogues for about... Ruby Rogues was the first real podcast where I was on with a panel like this every week. Was after we'd been doing it for about a year, I realized how much I'd grown just by talking to people, right? Mm-hmm. How much I'd really gained by week in and week out talking to the co-hosts that I had at the time, but also the guests, and just having them come in and inform me on stuff that I had never even thought about. And so, you know, we're talking about the consistent growth and doing the work to learn. And then we're also talking about publishing, but the two reinforce each other. And so that's a really, really powerful concept
Yeah, and actually you could almost extend that to something that we haven't necessarily talked about too much yet, but networking, right? Like part of doing these shows, for example, is getting to meet people from the React community. And that's not only valuable from just a straight up, well, speaking to smart people, they can just teach you things, right? There's that in and of itself, but having those relationships with people can pay off in really big ways, because then all of a sudden maybe you do need a job and you need people to reach out to. Well, if you have other people that know people, that can only work to your advantage. And I think this is kind of a little bit harder in a COVID era, because usually my recommendation for this would be know your local community, go to meetups, go to conferences in whatever area it is you specialize in. And presumably we'll get back to that world here before too long, but you could still try to get some of that accomplished in a digital world as well.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. And even today, I mean, the meetups around me, and I'm in Atlanta, a lot of them have translated to online meetups. So I see the JavaScript group having virtual meetups. I see the React group doing virtual meetups, and it's not the same, but it's the best that we've got for now. And people are still interested in that stuff. They still want to be learning new things and talking about it with other people who are interested in their areas. So they're still showing up. It's just a little bit different.
Yeah. And I know a lot of developers are hesitant to get it. Like, developers tend to be more introverted, right? But I think, like, to Paige's point earlier, that this is just another point of getting out of your comfort zone. Like, if you are that person that is introverted, I'd encourage you to just make an effort. Like, it's funny because developers, since they are introverted, like, just a little bit of extroversion and a little bit of people skills can set you apart, because it's such an introverted crowd. So it really is worth taking that step out and trying to get more involved, because it really does pay off.
Well, go ahead.
The other thing that I'm seeing out there in the community is that we're bringing in a wider breadth of people. And so I don't know that the stereotypical introverted developer will necessarily hold for a lot longer, because we are seeing all kinds of people joining our developer communities. And in my opinion, it makes it a richer experience, right? It really gives us the opportunity to think in new ways and experience new things and get the experience from other people. And so that's the other thing that really, I think, is a powerful thing that you get from this kind of networking, is taking the opportunity to not just meet people who you have something in common with, which is, hey, we do React, or hey, we do some other technology, hey, JavaScript, but also we do React, we do JavaScript, but my lived experience is different from yours. And so I approach problems different from the way you do. And that's an opportunity for me to challenge the way I think about the problems that I'm trying to solve and put it up against, you know, your way of thinking. And as we do that more and more and more, it enriches the entire community, and we come up with some really, really terrific stuff.
Completely agree with you. Because even as you talk about that, I'm thinking about one of the developers that I work with, who's one of our staff engineers. And he has a very different experience, in that right out of college, he and a friend of his started a software consulting company, just the two of them working on projects for clients. And he has a ton of experience in stuff beyond Java and JavaScript, which is what my team primarily works with. He has a lot of functional programming experience with Haskell. If you ever need help with the Lodash library, he is the person to turn to first, because he knows it forwards and backwards and inside and out. And just knowing that I can go to him when I'm struggling with something that is like a large data set, or it's being particularly slow to process, or even I'm just having trouble getting data into the shape that I want it to be, knowing that he will always say yes when I ask him if he's got time to help me is something that I value so much, as well as the advice that he gives me, that how he got good at this stuff was by learning different languages, even though they don't directly tie into what we're doing today. Just kind of having that auxiliary background knowledge will inform the rest of the code that you're writing and make the team better for it. So even if you're learning something that's completely not related to what you do at work, like Python or R or just something that Unity even, it's only going to make you a better developer, and that's only going to increase your arsenal of how you might solve different problems.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was back when I was saying, like, I do a lot of random things. I think that's one thing that I've discovered, that random things can come into play. So just to give one specific example, I spent years working on the NativeScript project, which is a open source mobile thing for iOS and Android. But it was very much outside of my comfort zone because it's just native iOS and Android development. And it's amazing those years I spent there, how much things that from that environment play into just my day-to-day web development stuff. Because I can know, like, oh, hey, on mobile, like on iOS, they do this. And like, maybe we could try to replicate that sort of experience. Even though the web is a different platform, it gives me like almost a way of thinking outside of the box, because I have in my head an approach that's completely foreign to the web, but which I might not be able to, like, I can't bring in like iOS APIs, but just be inspired by the approach they take and just have another angle of approaching the same problem.
Yep, absolutely. And it's just interesting too, not just down to the approach to particular problems, but as I've moved through different communities and I've seen other people move through different communities, somebody will come from a community where they are very keen on unit testing or end-to-end testing, right? And then they'll bring those ideas over to another community that doesn't have that strong emphasis. And so what happens is they'll start trying to find ways to bring it into that. And so then that influence comes along, and with that comes all the ideas and benefits of that, right? And then that kind of gets taken up by the next community that somebody else moves to. And so we see all of these ideas move around, and yeah, down to how we manage our code bases and how we think about building software in general that really don't specifically apply to React or Java or anything else. And it's just a function of how people move through and how ideas move through from one community to another. I remember working my tail off to become a senior developer. I read every book I could get my hands on. I went to any conference I could and watched the videos about the things that I thought I needed to learn. And eventually, I got that senior developer job. And then I realized that the rest of my career looked just like where I was now. I mean, where was the rush I got from learning? What was I supposed to do to keep growing? And then I found it. I got the chance to mentor some developers. I started a podcast and helped many more developers. I did screencasts and helped even more developers. I kind of became a dev hero. And now I want to help you become one too. And if you're looking forward to something more than doing the same thing at a different job 3 years from now, then join the Dev Heroes Accelerator. I'll walk you through the process of building and growing a following and finding people that you can uniquely help as you build the next stage of your career. You can learn more at devheroesaccelerator.com.
Yeah, I'm fairly new to the React world. And because of that, I sometimes have like an outside perspective that can sometimes be valuable. So I've got background with a bunch of other frameworks. So it mostly means I'm a really good complainer.
Why is this more like Angular?
But I mean, hopefully some of that like can be constructive criticism, right? At least that's the optimistic angle of looking at it, that some of this, like, well, you could argue that because of my like opinions, I help promote things that just work more the way that I like them to work. So I think there is some influence there. So I like what you say about you sort of take bits and pieces from these communities and can help move those things forward.
Yep, absolutely.
This is kind of going back to the whole promotion of yourself and your work and things like that. But one thing that I've noticed since I've started working on that personally is that things tend to snowball after a while if you are consistently showing up and shouting out into the void. Eventually, people will start to take notice if what you're saying is actually relevant or strikes a chord with them. Because I would say for probably the first year that I blogged, and I blogged every 2 weeks about stuff that I was learning at work, stuff that I had learned at boot camp, what have you, and probably had like a few hundred people on Medium who started following me. But after consistently showing up, saying things, having nobody respond, getting two claps on an article. A publication on Medium reached out to me and said, hey, would you like to publish under us? We have, you know, however many thousands of followers, and we'll help you increase your reach. And I did. And my followers started growing immensely. But it was only after putting in the work and having practically nobody respond to it or recognize it or hear it. And then from there, you know, other publications started reaching out and podcasts started reaching out and companies or individuals started reaching out. And that stuff doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time, and it happens with consistent effort and regular cadences. Because I can't tell you how many blogs I've found of people who write really good stuff, but I look at whatever else they've written and it's like there's a 3-year gap between when this blog post was published and when the last one was published. And that to me is an indicator that either you are stagnating in your career or you just, for whatever reason, lost the will to share what you've been learning. And I don't know what you've been doing for that time. You could have completely gone to another industry. You could have picked up another language. You could have done something really cool and you just couldn't find the time to write about it. But I think that consistency of continuing to be there and show up and share really makes you a figure that the rest of the community will want to continue to follow and engage with, because you're there, you're in the conversations, you're sharing what you know, and they can depend on you to be a regular source of new knowledge or new insights, as opposed to just, hey, having that strike of inspiration, writing one blog post about it and then disappearing off the grid again for 4 years.
Yeah, I'll plus one then, and I'll also say that it really is hard to fight against the desire to give up, because it really is hard at first, because the internet is a big place. There are lots of people and it's hard to get attention and focus on things that you're doing, but that regular cadence does help quite a bit. So Paige shared her blogging experience. I've been getting into Twitch streaming lately, so I could share some of my experience there. The first time I hit go live on Twitch, I had exactly one person watching me. And for all I know, it was my mom or my coworker or something. Who knows who it was. Mom. Yeah. And like the second or third stream I did, I had two people in there. And about 30 minutes into the stream, somebody came in to let me know that my mic was on mute for 30 or 40 minutes. And I just sort of collapsed into a ball in the corner and just sat there for a while. And, you know, but doing it more and more, like I'm now getting to the point where like I've sort of switched up the format to see what's more interesting that's come from experience. And I haven't been wildly successful, right? I'm still in the early stages of this, but it's like, well, now 20 or 30 people now show up, right? And just, but that comes from putting in that work, putting in the cadence, not getting discouraged, knowing that you're going to improve. Because the thing is, there was only one or two people showed up at first, but what they were showing up for wasn't that great, right? I wasn't very good at it. Not that I'm great now, but part of the cadence is not just getting people to recognize you, but part of doing that cadence is you yourself improving and making the thing that you're producing something that people want to consume.
Yep, absolutely. One thing on the other end of this that I want to throw in there, and I was going to talk about it when we were talking about learning, consistent learning, is there's an idea, and it's actually out of a marketing book called Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. And he talks about the Dream 100. And essentially what it is it's a list of 100 sources that you go to get consistent information about the stuff that you're trying to learn, right? And so going back to this idea of putting out consistent content, that's what keeps people coming back. I mean, it's funny, people are like, well, how do you build a podcast audience like the one that you have for React Roundup or JavaScript Jabber? And the reality is we produced an episode every week and we talked about stuff that was interesting to our audience. I mean, it's conceptually that simple. It's a lot of work, but it's conceptually that simple. And so, you know, just by having something like that in place, you know, going back to, okay, how do I stay on top of this stuff? Is, yeah, you put those sources in, right? And I typically list Twitter accounts. I list Facebook groups. just for community stuff, right? And then newsletters. Paige mentioned React Status and JavaScript Weekly. And there are others out there that you can go find that'll talk about, you know, this stuff, you know, for backends and frontends. I'm just trying to think. Books, I do list authors. They're not publishing content on a regular basis, but usually it leads me to other stuff that is going out on a regular basis. And a lot of times the books are, they go into more depth than a lot of the blog posts and other places go. And so it's a different kind of medium for staying current. I should just bring up my Dream 100 and look. But yeah, blogs, podcasts, YouTube channels, Reddits. I know some people really, really hate Reddit, but there are interesting conversations that go on there in some of the subreddits that are, you know, that they give you great ideas. But, you know, places like that, you know, anywhere where they aggregate content or where people are having conversations and asking questions. I mean, all of that really, that's where I go for my learning. And so sometimes I'll wind up watching a conference talk, and sometimes I'll wind up reading a blog post, and sometimes I'll look through all of it and I'll say, hey, look, none of this is really that interesting to me, or none of this is going to get me where I want to end up. And so I'll just go read another chapter out of the React book, right? And but again, you know, it's back to that consistent 30 minutes a day of learning. And sometimes I'll sit down and I'll actually, you know, write code off of one of the things that I learned. But usually it's pretty directed at the learning. So anyway, Dream 100 is the way to do that. And this is part of the framework that I'm putting together for dev heroes, right? To keep them focused on who they're trying to help. But if you're just looking to learn, I mean, you get that list of consistent places to go look, you can go kind of cycle through that and really get a good idea of what's going on out there in the community.
Yep. And some of this is just figuring out what works for you, what workflow. Because for me, like my learning, at least I usually, so I think everybody has their own strategy for this, but for mine is if there's some sort of new technology or new framework, I try to get familiar with what problem is it that this thing is solving. So I don't try to learn like every new thing in depth, because there's no amount of time that is going to get you that comprehensive of knowledge. But I'll try to think like, okay, what is this doing? So that I have in the back of my head, like, okay, well then if I run across this problem, I know this out there as being a solution for this and roughly how it works. Or maybe if I've been reading, like Chuck said, like Reddit threads or Hacker News threads, like people's rough opinions on it as well. Having some of that background knowledge can come in really handy. And then I learn the best by actually building something that's useful to me. But lots of times those are just completely silly things that are thrown away. I've built grocery lists that I don't know why I did this, but I ended up learning quite a bit about Angular back in the day. Like I said, I've got a Pokemon app I maintained. I built Flash games in the past. I don't know why I did this, but it's funny the whole thing you can pick up from doing these sort of random activities. But I share that because that's just what works for me over the years, right? I'm not suggesting everybody go out and build Flash games. In fact, it's probably not the greatest idea. But find the thing that's going to keep you motivated to do that sort of thing, the thing that's going to keep you learning and tinkering and building.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in the same boat with you, TJ. I like to, particularly, I like to have somebody kind of show me how they would use a framework that I'm unfamiliar with in a tutorial. But then after I've done that, I need to build something on my own to really solidify everything that I've just learned about it. Because the tutorial is great. I can follow along. Things work. Nothing breaks. But then I decide I want to change this or modify that and things break. And that's when I really start solidifying the knowledge that I've just taken in, is by going through those Stack Overflow threads and those GitHub issues and the documentation that I didn't look at that closely before. But yeah, it's the same thing. Building it and actually doing it and debugging it is how I really get to understand something completely.
Yep. Yep. I completely agree. And to a certain degree, I mean, building something or building and testing something, or, you know, building and testing and doing it without a certain level of help, you know, I put different constraints on it, you know, just to kind of push my, you know, challenge myself a little bit more, right? It's like, okay, I should be able to build a blah, 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 blah with React and Redux. without having to go look at the documentation, right? Or, you know, and for me, it's just, you know, the first time I do it, I just, does it work, right? And then it's, does it work and can I test it? And then it's, does it work and can I test it? And did I learn it so well that I've internalized enough of it to where I don't have to think about the basics, right? And so I push it to different levels when I build stuff sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Or you can even switch out the components that you're using to build it.
Yep.
You use CSS and JS in one project, maybe you switch it over to use SAS in another one, or you try Tailwind for a minute, or you throw in a component library just to see how things change and how different they are, what feels better to you even.
Yeah, and I'd say too, like, just as a more generic tip, having some sort of generic side project or side app that exists outside of your work environment can just be handy in general to have, because I have like a series of little apps where if I want to test something out, like I have a place where I can throw it in there and see what happens. Whereas like for my progress development, right, I don't have like a logical production app where I was like, you know, let's try a full-scale CSS and JavaScript implementation and just, well, I'll dedicate a few days of work to see how this goes. Right. I mean, maybe you could find the right situation, but lots of times you'd be forcing it at work. Whereas if you have your own little playground, you have a venue that you can go to just do silly things, do experimental things that you can learn from.
Yeah. The other thing is that usually the playground apps, I must have a zillion repos on GitHub because I've done this on more than one occasion. But a lot of times then if I go in for that job interview or I'm talking about a specific thing on a podcast or something like that, a lot of times I can say, yeah, I went and played with it on this repo in this branch. And then people can go and look at it and they can see, oh yeah, he kind of does have an idea of how this all goes together.
Yep.
I am nodding emphatically at everything that you just said. Being able to point to those types of things or say, I built this, you know, here's a little screenshot of it, or here's a blog post that it inspired me because of it. That stuff is like gold.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, effectively, and this goes more into the job search stuff, but people are looking for other people that they can identify with in certain ways. And one of the easiest ways, because code is just hard to identify with. Oh, you Redux, I Redux, we all Redux, right? But it's different when it's, hey, look what I did, right? Here's, because you're almost telling a story, right? About what you did with it. And that's just a different level of, oh, I get it. I get that you get it. Than it is if you're just explaining like the basic concepts of, oh, I have a reducer and blah, 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 right?
I like the phrase that you just used there. I get that you get it, because that's basically like when I do interviews and I'm on the interviewer side, that's basically what I'm trying to get across from the person I'm interviewing. So I'll ask questions like, what do you think of React hooks? Or what do you think of CSS and JavaScript sort of thing? But there's not a right answer, right? Like I don't care if they say they love hooks or hate hooks. That's not the point. Basically, what I'm looking for is that I get an informed answer that says this person is clearly experimented, or to put it like you said, I get that they get it, that they know it and they have enough to have like a reasoned opinion on this. And that's what I'm looking for, is for that little bit of understanding. And having these little repos that you can tinker with gives you that ability to basically have that opinion. Because otherwise it's hard to have an opinion on something from just reading about it in blog posts. It's much different if you can say, oh, well, I don't like it. But I don't like it because when I tried to use it, the documentation was really confusing and I kept getting these weird compiler errors. Because that's how you can get across your knowledge of the subject too. Because then if other people will be able to share that experience and say like, yeah, the documentation for that is really horrible. And you pass along that understanding.
Yeah. I have one more thing to add, then I'm going to change the subject because there's one more important piece to this that I think nobody talks about. And I've kind of left it for last for a reason. But the other thing that this does is then let's say you show up and you're doing a job interview or you're talking to somebody and they bring up, hey, I'm using the React Zingy McZingy Face library that you've never heard of, right? And through the whole interview, you've been saying, oh yeah, go check out this branch of this repo. Oh, I played with that over here on this thing. And then they say Zingy McZingy Face and you're like, I have no idea what that is. I'm going to hire you because I know you're going to go home and there's going to be a branch on that repo now for that thing. Right. And more than anything else, when I've hired developers in the past, what I'm looking for is, yeah, can they do the job, you know, kind of basic level stuff, but more than anything else. And I've hired junior developers over senior developers for junior, for senior developer positions, because I knew that if I looked at them and said, I need you to know this, I need you to be able to do this, that they would come back tomorrow knowing how to do that thing. And that is more important to me, and always has been, than having the senior developer that thinks that they know all the answers to the thing. And yep. So it really goes a long way toward convincing people that you're not a risk to hire. Anyway, we're kind of getting toward the end of our time, and I really do want to talk about this last thing. And this is the one thing that I think we don't talk about that I think really makes the difference between the top 5% and even the top 1% a lot of times. And that is just having a plan, right? The folks that I see make it to the top 5% or the top 1%, you know, those people that are just out there doing what they're doing and everybody knows who they are, they kind of find their way into it up to the top 5%, just being the, you know, consistent learners and things like that. But the people who make it to the top 1%, at some point they realize that there's a certain place they want to get to. And if they don't plan out how to get there, they won't be able to get it. And so they actually sit down and they say, okay, where do I want to be in a few years? What do I need to know to get there? What skills do I need to build to get there? And then they actually consistently execute on that. And so if you're looking, if you're top 10% and you're just sitting there going, how do I get to top 5%? Or you're top 5%, how do I get to top 1%? Yeah, you need to sit down. You need to figure out what you want. You need to figure out what that looks like, and you need to make a plan on how to get there. And so, yeah, you know, it's this career planning, and nobody talks about career planning in software development, but I find, and to a certain level, you can kind of coast your way up, right? You can kind of muddle your way through to a certain place. And I don't know if that's 25% or 10% or 5%, but after that, you need a plan and you probably need a coach. You know, and that coach could be somebody who's senior to you at work, right? It doesn't have to be somebody you hire, but you need some level of mentorship as well. And so, yeah, I'm a little curious how much of this you guys have done as far as just going, okay, I want to be in this kind of a position. And so these are the steps I'm going to take in order to achieve that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it's important. So, I mean, just to share some of my story, I started off working in big insurance, right? Like the very typical corporate job. And I liked the place well enough, but I also knew that I was kind of bored with what I was doing and I wanted to do something more. And so my plan at the time was, well, I'll just start blogging, right? So I started a blog, I put that out there, that led to speaking. But the plan was always like the end goal was, well, I have to find something that just pushes me or challenges me more than what I'm doing. So that's the goal. And then the steps I identified were things like blogging and speaking as a way of getting there. And then I think over time, your goals have to change because it depends on what you sort of want. Like not everybody necessarily wants to be a top 1% developer, which is totally fine as well. So it's kind of setting yourself up, I think, also for reasonable expectations. But to have a goal that you can strive for. So for me right now, it's being a bigger name in some of the streaming worlds, right? So you have to continue to have goals. You have to continue to sort of pivot on and move them over time as well.
I agree with all of that. Like for me, I came from a completely different industry. I wasn't a developer by trade. So my first thing was getting through coding bootcamp, which was a great challenge. And once I had finished that, my initial goal was to just get a job doing development. And I was lucky enough to have set myself up to get that opportunity. And once I was there, I was contractor. And my next goal was to get hired as a full-time associate. And then from there, once I had become a full-time associate, it was get promoted to a senior software engineer from a regular software engineer. And now that I've achieved that, it's kind of like TJ. It's like, I've been writing for a while. I should do more speaking engagements. I could probably
write some longer form content. I'd like to grow my Twitter following and just kind of get my name out into the developer community more. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm focused on at the moment. But yeah, it should always be kind of evolving and changing. And once you hit that goal, what is your next goal? You know, how do you want it? Or what do you want to learn next? Like, if you feel like you've got a pretty good handle on React, maybe you want to try React with TypeScript, or maybe you want to look at Gatsby or Next or another framework and see how that compares. It's just having more things to add to your resume and kind of build your street cred to other developers in the community.
Yep, absolutely. And I think it's interesting too, because, you know, TJ talked a bit about sort of the public facing stuff, but Paige, you know, some of the early goals that you had were just get a job or get to that next level in the job, which are easy to envision. It's easy to figure out what you have to do to get there, right? I mean, worst case scenario, you go ask your boss, right? I want to be a senior associate. What do I have to do, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and then you just go do it. Then you come back and you say, hey, I did it, you know, let's make this stuff happen, right? You know, for me, it's interesting because this has evolved so much over the years. I mean, I remember initially when I was learning Ruby on Rails, and I have a degree in computer engineering from Brigham Young University, right? And so I'd done some coding at school. I'd done a whole bunch of, I guess it'd be DevOps now, systems administration, before I got hired on. And I was basically doing tech support for my first job. And so my goal was get hired as a software engineer, right? And so, you know, I was leveling up on Ruby on Rails, and I, you know, I knew I needed to get better at that. I moved into a QA role because I thought it would get me closer to that, right? And so you take these steps and you make this plan to get there. Once I was there, yeah, you know, it kind of evolved into, okay, now I want to be a team lead. Now I want to make a certain amount of money. And then, funny enough, I started doing this content stuff. And at the same time, I was freelancing. And so my goals around that were essentially, you know, have, you know, this much or less downtime every month, right? And, you know, make sure that I'm spending X amount of time with my kids. And I think a lot of times too, when we talk about the plan, we leave out all of the personal stuff, right? How am I growing spiritually? How am I growing personally? How am I managing financially? How am I, you know, doing these other things? Because they all affect each other. And so, you know, nowadays I plan out, you know, spiritual, relational, emotional, or not emotional, intellectual, career, and financial. So I have those five areas, and I actually write out a vision for it, right, as to what I want. So professionally at this point, it's kind of funny because initially it was just getting to that next job level. But once you get to a certain place, then it's, you know, maybe I want to be viewed as an expert in this area. I want to be recognized and blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe your goal. And I've been talking to a lot of people who are at this place where they're trying to figure out what that next stage is, right? Because they're senior developers. They've got a pretty sweet gig. They're getting paid, you know, plenty of money. And so it's like, okay, what's next, right? And so a lot of it comes down to recognition, or I want to impact so many people, or I want to, you know, I want to be responsible for helping so many people get such and such a level raise in their jobs. And so those are the kinds of people that I'm talking to now about their vision. And so I guess what I'm trying to tell people is that this will change at different stages, and you may find yourself in a position to where you're thinking about Twitch, or you're thinking about, you know, some of these other things at a higher level. But it doesn't mean that the goals for people at a different place to just get a promotion aren't good goals, right? And you can work on several of them at once. And some of the other stuff that we've talked about here play into that, right? Where you're publishing and practicing and doing all these things that play into it. And so, but yeah, then you sit down and make a plan. And I tell people to make a 3-month plan, right? Because 3 months is pretty easy to envision. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get all the way to your goal. But you can actually sit down and say, okay, I'm going to go to Toastmasters meetings because I want to speak, right? And you can get specific on that. I'm going to learn about storytelling because I want to speak, right? So I'm going to read a book on storytelling this week, and I'm going to read another book on storytelling next week, right? If I'm trying to plan this out for a year, it gets really hard to envision things past about 3 months. And so that's what I tell people. There's a great book called the 12 week year. 12 weeks is about 3 months. I recommend that as a jumping off point for that. But yeah, then you can figure that out. So it's funny because I'm going to throw out my vision of where I want to go here within the next year. And most of it, I want to be surrounded by other influencers that are positive, uplifting voices in the community. Because I feel like there are a lot of voices that just tear people apart. We're seeing a certain level of people getting canceled. I'm not going to argue about the merits or not of any of this. But the kind of impact I want to have is I want to actually bring more positive voices into the community. And so I'm sitting down and I'm going, okay, so what are the specifics of that, right? And so I've had people reach out to me and I've reached out to other people. So we're starting a Women in Tech podcast here within the next few weeks, right? And they're bringing people in and they're talking about how they got where they are and what success looks like and things like that. And, you know, so positive voice, right? And that's what I'm looking for. You know, that's a lot of the reasons why I've brought the two of you onto this show, right? Is because you're out there and you're talking about things that help people out. And so, you know, I'm doing the Dev Heroes Accelerator. I'm just talking to people in general. I'm trying to meet some of these positive voices that I'm not necessarily helping on my own to lift up, but at the same time, people that I can promote, feel good about. And so I've got very specific things that I'm working through on this stuff. And then the other part of it is, you know, systemizing more all of the parts of the podcast network so that I can help these people in the most efficient way. And so you get to a different place depending on where you're at and where you think you can make a difference. But I don't want people to look at my vision and think that they're doing it wrong because they're trying to get a raise, right? I want people to evaluate that from where they're at.
It's very well said. And I think the only thing I would add is I think having those goals is not only a way to know what you should do, but also to know what you shouldn't do as well. Mm-hmm. So like if one of your goals is I want to spend more time with my family, then knowing that in the back of your head can help you say, oh, when this certain thing comes up, that's going to take a lot of my time. Well, I have to say no to that. And it almost gives you like it makes you feel better because no one likes to say no, right? But it gives you a way of doing that. Or if a job opportunity comes up, you can evaluate against that goals. Well, yep. Is that going to help me be a bigger name? If so, then that means yes, it's a really good opportunity, and the flip side as well.
Yeah. The other end of that too is I've seen some people that say, okay, well, I want to be a well-known blogger, right? And so they sit down and after about 2 weeks, they're just sitting there going, if I have to write another blog post about this thing, I am going to break my laptop into a million pieces, right? So change your goal, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be permanent, right? But you do have to commit, right? You have to commit. I tell people you have to commit for at least 30 days, right? So at the end of 30 days, if blogging is just not doing it for you, then do something else.
Yeah. If you spend 30 days, if your goal is to spend more time with your family, you spend 30 days with your family, you hate them. I mean, you got to readjust.
You give it the honest try.
My joke is that some people, their goal in life is to go and surf every weekend, right? And so the job is just a means to an end, right? Great. Great. Mm-hmm. Just own it, right?
Yeah. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And I do like that bringing it to a broader perspective than tech, because I think sometimes people can get caught up in the tech specific goals when really that's just in the grand scheme of things, it's just a small portion of our lives.
Yeah. It's so true.
And different pieces of, you know, different goals will end up taking different priority as your life goes along. Sometimes you'll be super focused on your career. Sometimes you'll just be like, I really want to focus on my friends and my family. I want to watch my kids grow up, whatever it is. Those things are just going to shift and different priorities will hit the top.
Yep, absolutely. And sometimes it's going to be stuff that's outside of your control, right? I mean, and this is another part of this too, was my vision 3 years ago included being around for my dad because his health was poor and I knew that he was just going to need extra help. You know, when I was doing things like driving him to dialysis at 4 a.m. every morning and stuff like that, because my mom couldn't do it. She couldn't get him out of the house, you know, stuff like that, you know, and then he passed away. And so my priority shifted, right? And so, you know, and I guess I did have a choice with my dad, but it wasn't I would have regretted not doing it, if that makes sense, right? And I go all out to not have any regrets. And maybe that's me, you know, and maybe for you, you play it safe, because if you go all out and you fail, you're going to regret it more deeply than if you play it safe. I don't know. I'm not, you know, everybody's a little different, but yeah, you know, sometimes it's going to be my kid has this thing and we're living the cancer life for the next 2 years. Right. And so you shift it and you make it work because that's important. But yeah, I mean, whatever it is, that's what you do. But don't lose sight of the important stuff in life for your career, but don't lose sight of your career either if you're going to derive fulfillment from it and you can achieve those things.
Well said.
Yeah. Hey, folks, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become 1 in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
All right. Well, I'm kind of at the end of the time that I've got other than picks. So if we want to just head into picks real quick, that would be great. Paige, why don't you start us off?
Well, my pick is a very timely one, considering that we're in the Arctic blast, at least in the U.S., for the past week or two. But this is something that I've been doing for a few years now, and it's amazing. It's having a heated blanket that you turn on your bed before you actually get into bed, maybe 30 minutes to 45 minutes before you actually hop into bed, to have a nice, warm, cozy bed. So they're very inexpensive. Everybody sells them. I got mine from Target, but Sunbeam is a pretty reputable heated blanket maker. And I would highly recommend that. We just got the twin size bed, put it across the bottom of the bed, because having cold feet when you first get into bed is the worst thing in the world. And every night during the winter, I'll just go and turn it on, and then we'll get in an hour later, and it's the best. So that is my sick pick for this week.
Nice. TJ, how about you?
Yes. Well, speaking of goals, one of my goals was to get back to reading a little bit more, because I had found out I had developed a bad habit of like scrolling Twitter at night versus doing anything of value. So I read a book series that was recommended to me by a friend of my wife called the Divine Cities Trilogy. And it's fantasy. It's kind of interesting because it's a world where gods are real. In a sense, there's like 5 or 6 gods in this world, and they interact with people. And it's just sort of just good read, good fiction, fantasy. It's a trilogy, so it doesn't take too terribly long to get through.
Yeah, it's funny. It's just a trilogy, so it doesn't take too terribly long to get through. I've been talking to my mom because she just started Wheel of Time.
Oh, gosh.
And it took me like 6 months to get all the way through it, because I just listen when I'm not listening to podcasts or other things that make me think.
That's why I say in the fantasy world, a trilogy is not too long, right?
Right.
Wheel of Time is like the ultimate example, though.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah. Yeah, the only other one that I can think of that is on that level is Brandon Sanderson. He has several series that are all part of the same Cosmere universe. And so, yeah, they're eventually all going to collide, is my understanding. And so, yeah, that's going to be a pretty epic set of books. But anyway, my picks. So the first one is the Dev Heroes Accelerator. So if you're kind of, the thing that I keep hearing from people is I'm kind of stuck at senior developer, right? They don't know where to go from there. A lot of times you want to build influence. You want people kind of coming to you with opportunities instead of the other way around, right? So I've been invited to more than one conference to speak or to record podcasts at, or both. And invited meaning that they paid my travel expenses and the whole nine yards. The last job interview I did, I showed up. They said, "We love your podcast," and they hired me. I think I already talked about that. You know, so it's just opening up those kinds of opportunities, but also just, yeah, again, creating that positive
force within the programming community where we can talk about building people up and helping people get further along in their careers. And so if you're interested in that, go to devchat.tv/heroes and you can check that out. I've been spending a lot of time on that. There are probably a few other things that are going to come out of that for the people that are just looking for, you know, kind of a walkthrough on the Dream 100 and how to stay current, stuff like that. But for right now, that's where we're at. And then I've got a couple of other picks. One is I took a little bit of a personal retreat earlier this week. So that was like Monday and Tuesday. And I just checked into a hotel. I still had to do carpool for my kids. So I literally stayed in a hotel 10 minutes from my house, but it was quiet. It was nice just to get away. My laptop died the last night I was in the hotel. So I just kind of got some downtime that way because I was going to fiddle with some stuff and I couldn't. But yeah, I mean, overall, it was just a positive experience and I was pretty burned out. So, you know, just take the opportunity to like enforce some quiet time. I know that's not always an opportunity for that everybody can take advantage of, but if you can, people due to the pandemic aren't checking into hotels. So I got into a nice hotel room for pretty inexpensive. And yeah, I was pretty happy with the outcome there. So I'm going to pick that. And then while I was in the hotel, I spent a bit of time just watching Netflix. Specifically, I was watching The Umbrella Academy, which is a weird show. I'm enjoying it. The characters, I'm pretty well convinced at this point that characters make a TV show or a movie. And when you stop identifying with the characters, that's when you quit watching. And these characters are quirky and interesting. And they have real, they all have real issues. Let's just put it that way. And so, you know, sometimes it's a little more extreme. Well, in these cases, all of them are more extreme than any of the problems that I have in my own head. But it's interesting just to kind of see it play out and then go, oh yeah, I do that. I'm not self-destructive like that about it, but I do that. And it's also interesting just to watch and see how the interplay happens. And there's clever storytelling and all that that makes it fun to watch. So I'm going to pick it, knowing that it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea because it's kind of a weird show. And those are my picks.
Cool.
Nice.
All right, folks. Well, we are going to be recording more of these. So stay tuned. And until next time, Max out.
See everybody.
See you next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.